Welcome to the Shut Up and Ride podcast, brought to you with Charles Owen, the wonderful Charles Owen. I'm a little bit nervous, people, and I'm actually sweating, which is quite appropriate for this episode of the podcast. I'm joined by the lovely Benjamin, who's feeling a bit poorly. So if he coughs and splutters his way through this episode, it's okay because we have someone who can help him with this. Yeah. How are you doing, Benjamin?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm so excited about today. I don't feel like it makes logical sense pretty much that I'm here, but at the same time, I am so excited because actually Dr. Louise pretty much saved my mum's life. I'm just fascinated to be here. She changed my mum's life. And so if I can be here to try and get more people to, you know, think about doing something with this, then yeah. Because I know I don't have any of the plumbing, but I do have a wife and a sister and a mum. And so,
excellent. Yeah. You don't have ovaries, but you're here for it. And I think it's more like if you're a man and you're turning this on and you're thinking, what's he talking about? I'm going to turn off. Don't you dare. Listen to this. Play it louder. Turn this episode up in the office, guys. We're also joined by the wonderful Steph Bradley, who was one of the guests on the podcast who kind of kicked off this important journey the podcast has been on. Steph, thank you so much. You're going to be the adult today or not.
Thanks, Jenny. Thank you for inviting me. And I think it's brilliant that Ben's here because I think it's so important. So many men coaches coach female equestrians. So absolutely. And like you say, there were husbands, there are husbands, there are sons. And I think it's so important. And there isn't enough of men's knowledge on this subject, I believe, across the whole of the, you know, whole of the world. Thank you for inviting me back. And I'm very excited to still be here.
I know, we both straightened our hair in preparation. So now I'm going to introduce our guest. I cannot say enough wonderful things about this lady. She personally has changed my life. As Ben said, she changed his mum's life. Steph, I know she's changed your life. I don't think you realise how important you are to the world. You are leading the revolution for women. I just had a conversation with my daughter who went, I don't want to go to school, mummy, because I'm six and that age is a real asshole age that no one tells you about. And I was like, mummy's doing something important today. And I'm talking to a woman who is genuinely changing the world. It is the wonderful Dr. Louise Newson. Thank you so much. I cannot believe you're on our podcast. This is just amazing.
You're very lovely. And I feel very humbled because I am just, you know, a mum of three children who's a doctor trying to, you know, address the injustice of women who haven't been believed, listened to, treated. You know, they've been wrongly medicalized. And I'm quite a grumpy, miserable person, actually, because I get very frustrated.
You do not seem it. I love the fact, even before we started this podcast, I said to Dr. Louise, can we swear? And unequivocally, as the answer is yes, you do not seem grumpy. You're definitely my kind of human. First of all, I heard you... I just think one of the reasons I know about you is you were on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show, which I'm a big fan of. He's a brilliant interviewer. And I heard you say the words PMDD. And I was like, what the holy hell? I can't even get my doctor to say that. And I'm hearing it on Virgin Radio. You then went and talked about perimenopause. I'm like, what is that? You just seem to have opened so many people's eyes and ears. But as a woman, hearing someone and on the radio talking about these subjects, how hard has that been just to get your voice out there and get listened to, first of all?
To be honest, it's really hard. And I've just announced today my book coming out in May. And I've written a chapter, actually. There's lots of chapters, but one chapter that's relevant to this conversation is about women who've been taken down by the establishment. And it's gone on for decades, actually, even since the Edinburgh Seven, these seven women who decided they wanted to become doctors, God forbid, and they had stones thrown at them as they were going to sit their final exams. They had to sit in a different room. And, you know, throughout medicine, people have been taken apart, taken down. But I'm quite tough, but I didn't expect it to be as hard as it has been. And even since being on the Chris Evans show, I've been dropped a lot from media because they made this Panorama documentary about me, portraying me as some, you know, awful doctor. How dare I prescribe hormones really to women? So it's really quite shocking. But actually, what's different now compared to other doctors? There was an amazing doctor, Dr. Katrina Dalton, in the 50s and 60s, who actually coined PMDD and treated a lot of women with progesterone. She was hauled in front of the GMC and the authorities, but she didn't have podcasts. There wasn't social media. There wasn't this, there was a massive network of women who really supported her. And I've spoken to her daughter and various patients of hers, but it was very different to now. We don't need the media, actually. We can just need each other. And women are, sorry, Ben, but women are quite intuitive. Like, they talk and they work it out for themselves. And a lot of what I'm doing is common sense. I haven't created a new drug. I don't work with pharmaceutical companies. I don't push out any new products. I've not got my face or name behind a new menopause shampoo or anything that's a bit wacko. I'm just allowing people to open their minds and realize what's going on. And people don't like, sometimes the truth hurts, doesn't it really? So, yeah.
I think what infuriates me about all of this is my mum had to fight tooth and nail for 2 years to get treatment. And at the same time, the doctors have been trying to give my dad testosterone for ages. So at the same time, my mum had encountered your work. In fact, the way she got treated in the end was she took a questionnaire of yours and basically went to the doctors and said, I've got 38 of these symptoms. Sort your life out. Help me.
Yeah.
And then it just infuriates me because it is, we talk about things like gender pay gap and inequalities there. But how come my dad, who's like, no, I feel great, when he goes for a checkup at the doctors, they're like, you know, you're in your 60s. You can get jacked if you want.
Yeah.
I just don't understand, like, the illogic. Like,
no, there isn't any logic. And you know, one of the reasons, well, there's lots of reasons why I'm cross most days, but you know, I take hormones. I'm very open about taking body identical natural hormones to replace my missing hormones. I'm 55, so my hormones are not the same as they were 10 or 20 years ago. Yeah. But I can't get my hormones from my NHS GP. And I'm very fortunate. I know a good doctor. I can go and see somebody else. But actually, if I wasn't English speaking, if I wasn't educated, if I couldn't advocate for myself, if I didn't have any money, then the chances are I wouldn't be getting hormones either. And then the other chances are is that I would be prescribed antidepressants. I would be prescribed painkillers for my muscle and joint pains and other non-licensed medication for my migraines that worsen when I don't have hormones. I probably wouldn't be happily married and I wouldn't be working because I have such bad brain fog if I don't use testosterone. So it's really weird that I can be medicalized in other ways with drugs that have side effects and risks. Whereas I can't think of a risk of having my natural hormones back. So it's just really incongruous,
doesn't make sense.
Really. No, it doesn't make sense, really.
I had really bad hip pain and I was going to a physio. I was going every week to a physio. Mm. As a rider without my hips were pain, I wasn't able to ride and it was really frustrating. And I had an MRI, sent for an MRI and all of this stuff. And you've got hip arthritis and we need to do a hip replacement. They would have sent me under the knife. I would have had a hip replacement under the NHS. Mm. Isn't it cheaper to actually look at someone holistically and then deal with them holistically? I didn't have to pay for all that physio that I had. I didn't have to go, you know, actually when I actually at the same time had then hot flashes and then went on HRT. Mm. Funnily enough, my hips were fine again and I could actually ride horses again. So you kind of go, well, it just doesn't make sense to not diagnose correctly and to misdiagnose and to give drugs and to give operations that potentially might not be needed.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So would you say, so I even now, like with, I've done obviously all my research, I'm just holding up your book, which I have done, which, although I have to say, can I be very honest with you, Louise? I loved it and I knew the sections that I wanted to read because I'm informed and I've done my research. But that's why I think podcasts and audio books and things are so like, because I think I might be a bit neurospicy and I think that's come out since my estrogen levels may have plummeted. And to be able to sit down and concentrate and read a book has actually been quite hard.
Yeah.
So I have kind of, and what I love is like all the chapters are so clear. So I've been able to go to the bits that I really want. So that's why I'm glad I'm able to dip out and find you in lots of other places and documentaries. But I was shocked the other day when I was talking to a friend of mine who's 43 and she was telling me about some stuff. And I said to her, have you ever thought about being perimenopausal? She was like, well, I'm not having hot flashes. And I was like, it's the biggest bit of kind of myth the fact that women think they need to be having hot flashes before they go to the doctor. Because I've not really had hot flashes. Luckily, after a lot of many, many doctors, I finally found a woman who cannot wait to hear this podcast. She's a menopause specialist here in Canada. But would you say that's one of your biggest frustrations, is women missing out on treatment because they haven't got hot flashes?
Yeah, I mean, I have lots of frustrations. One, even before thinking about symptoms, one of my big frustrations is the words that are used, actually. I don't actually like the word menopause or perimenopause because it's not telling you anything. It's really saying, are you having periods or not? And I don't think as women we should be defined as to what our wombs are doing. And so when we think about the hormone changes that occur, hormones affect every cell in our body. They get above our bikini line. They actually are made in our brains as well. So what I'm really keen to be more specific with my language and think about the three hormones, progesterone, estradiol, testosterone, separately. And then some people have three diagnoses. They have progesterone deficiency, estradiol deficiency, testosterone deficiency. Some might just have one. So a lot of women in their 30s are testosterone deficient. They're having regular periods. They might be having enough progesterone or estradiol. A lot of women with PMDD, especially younger women, are probably just progesterone deficient for a few days a month. Once you start talking like that, then it's very obvious that you probably need that hormone, and you can ask the next question, as in, how do I get that progesterone? What dose? What type? How long do I take it for? Or what have you? But it's caused so much confusion. And then the whole hot flushes thing is an added layer of confusion, because what happened many years ago when they discovered hormones, they were discovering lots of hormones, but the ones in the ovaries, they realized when women had their ovaries removed, they started to get all these symptoms. And a lot of the symptoms we know are far more common affecting our brains. So the memory problems, the fatigue, the poor concentration, the low mood, the anxiety, the intrusive thoughts. We know from monitoring hundreds of thousands of women through our Balance app that those are the most common symptoms. But the problem is, many years ago, and even now to an extent, women were just labelled as being hysterical women. If you're doing a study and someone says, oh, I feel a bit anxious, well, how do you monitor that and measure it? Mm-hmm. But if you're there with your clipboard doing a study and someone's having a hot flush, you can mark it really nicely on a chart. So very quickly, it was about any research on menopause is flushes and sweats. And that's where it's been associated together. And then also many years ago when they were discovering the hormones, they paid the gynecologist to work with them. And the gynecologists were paid to do research because they could get the women, the patients, and then they were paid to do the publications as well. So menopause has been sort of owned by gynecologists. And I have nothing against gynecologists, but they don't usually have a general training. They don't see, I mean, they don't do cardiology, they don't do neurology, they don't do psychiatry. So they don't really think beyond the ovaries and the reproductive organs. So when I speak to many gynecologists and talk about the mental health issues, the symptoms that occur, they say, oh, no, that doesn't happen. But they're not seeing those women, because women don't go with mental health issues to a gynecologist.
You just even in that sentence there, you've kind of solved so, like, obviously someone who was eventually diagnosed with PMDD. And I also suffer from something called labyrinthitis, which is like vestibular, like dizziness. And I have said to four different doctors, I think this is cyclical. I only get this dizziness before my period. Absolutely not. No, there's no connection between periods and labyrinthitis and dizziness. And I found one paper that said that when your progesterone levels drop, you might get dizzy. And like, to the point I was bedbound on a couple of months, and yet started progesterone and I no longer get it.
No.
And this has been going on for 15 years. It's absolutely insane. I bet you get so much of that, don't you? Where have you been all my life?
So I wish I'd been around as the doctor I am now 20 years ago, actually, because I was taught by, well, I wasn't really taught much about menopause at all. And then most of my learning has been self-taught. But even if you just look at the top layer, again, it's flushes, sweats, it's period problems. But because I've got a very inquisitive, almost a bit annoying mind, I'm just always, but why? But I've also got a pathology degree, so I'm very into basic science. I like to know what's going on in a molecular level in a detailed way. And so when you go back and look at how the hormones work in the body, it becomes a lot more obvious. So knowing that you've got hormone receptors in your inner ear that sort out your balance, and those little cilia, those little sort of little hairs that determine where your head is, it tells your brain whether your head's moving. They can be damaged if you don't have the hormones there. It's quite obvious, but if you don't know that, you can't join the dots, really. And so often in medicine, a lot of things that you learn, you need to unlearn as you develop and learn, because, you know, science evolves and you learn a lot from patients, actually. A lot of medicine is an art. It's not just a science, and it's pattern recognition. So the other thing is, I'm quite old now, so I learned a lot of medicine from some amazing doctors who were very, very good at taking proper histories and really listening to patients. Whereas now, it's so easy to get a blood test. It's so easy to get a scan. You don't really need to listen to the patient because you just look at the results. But actually, you do need to listen to the patient, because you saying you get a symptom that happens just before your periods, like my 14-year-old could tell you that's going to be related to your hormones, even if she can't work out the reason. But the problem is, a lot of medicine and doctors are quite arrogant. If they don't know the answer, they'll just make something up. They won't go, oh, do you know what, Jenny, I really don't know what's wrong with you, but let me just think a little bit. Let me just talk to someone. And I don't mind sharing my ignorance. I don't mind saying to people, oh, I'm not really sure. But I also don't mind admitting that I've got it wrong. And many years ago, I've seen many women with labyrinthitis. Didn't even ask about their periods. Didn't even think about their hormones, because I didn't join the dots. But now I have done, and it's also obvious. And a lot of doctors are understanding it, but there's two fields, really. There's those fields that are going, oh, gosh, Louise is up to something, let's learn, and really it would help our patients. Or there's the other lot, which seem to be a bit louder in the media, by going, no, she's just a social media influencer, she's just a GP, who does she think she is? And they're missing it, actually, because they're missing it from their patients. Yeah. Because I've also got a huge amount of clinical experience and knowledge. You know, we see a lot of our patients, we publish our research and our data, and it makes sense as well. You know, if something makes sense, it's usually right.
I think one of the reasons that this topic resonates with so much with our listeners is, and I don't know how much your work has crossed over into the sporting world, but because equestrians, and Steph is nodding, who's going to nod a lot here, and Ben will as well, probably definitely with your mum and stuff, Ben. We are a breed of women that are pretty tough. We are a breed of women that don't like to be injured. I mean, I've broken bones and still ridden horses. So to suddenly wake up one morning with crippling anxiety and fear that you don't want to go round your horse or lead it in from a field is, again, like, oh God, no, just get on with it. Just get through it. Just get... And I think suddenly talking about it on this podcast, so many women. I mean, I've been on TV for years, Louise, and I've had more women come up to me about this podcast than they ever did about a show I did on Eurosport.
Amazing. Good.
It is. It's amazing. And so many are like, that's me. Yeah. That's me. I thought I'd just lost my bottle.
Well, this is the thing. And actually, there was an article last week that really upset me in the newspaper, because it was saying that there's a crisis in midlife depression and suicide. And I thought, oh, good, they're going to talk about our data, which showed that there's a 92% reduction in suicide in women who take hormones. But of course, no, they didn't. What they said is women need to have a stiff upper lip. They need to talk about it a bit more, because they are not talking enough. And if they talk about how they feel, it's going to improve, because it's really difficult for women, because they're in a sandwich generation. They've got young children, they've got elderly mothers, and they're often working and juggling. So they're there. You know, get on with it. And I just thought, how awful, actually. And like, when I was listening to your podcast before, and it's brilliant, by the way, but, you know, you are tough. You are really tough people. But actually, I've been on a horse track a few times, but I'm not a rider. But it's quite, any animals, you know, there's quite a spiritual connection, and they pick up on your mood, they pick up on your emotions and everything else as well. You know, I know, just as an aside, really, 10 years ago when I was having symptoms, if I was in a really foul mood, my whole family would be in a foul mood. You know, if my husband's in a foul mood, which he often isn't, actually, but he just goes into the study and has a glass of wine or something and he's fine, and we all ignore him. But it's the same with animals. They pick up on how you are, especially when you've got this close relationship. You can't hide it. You can hide a rash. You can hide a hot flush, a physical symptom. So there's that side of it. But also, I was listening on your podcast, you were talking about, I'm sorry to talk about vaginas, but you were talking about vaginal dryness and soreness and having to have different saddles and the positioning. And I was there, right, almost shouting at you, but you didn't hear me, obviously, because I was just listening. Because no one should be experiencing vaginal soreness and dryness and irritation. Like everybody, including those people that have had breast cancer, can have vaginal hormones. And I often give something called prasterone, which is it's called DHEA. So it converts to estrogen and testosterone in the vagina and the surrounding tissues. And it can transform and often save lives because it reduces urinary tract infections. So anyone who's aware of something that's not right, you know, if you had a broken leg, you wouldn't just go, okay, well, I'll just carry on walking with a crutch every day. You would fix it. And this is a hormonal problem that needs fixing and it can be fixed. It's about the right dose and type of hormones. But we're just sort of putting these crutches around. And I just feel so sad because there's people giving up a sport that they absolutely love because the medical system is letting them down. You know, and it's more apparent now than ever before. And it's not always because we're talking about it more. It's because there's less than half the number of women taking hormones than there was 25 years ago. And we're living longer. So it's so much that's wrong. You know, globally, only 5% of women who have menopause are prescribed hormones. And in the UK, it's 14%. But in 2000, it was 30%. So more women are suffering with these symptoms and they're not being able to carry on with things that they enjoy. And why should we stop just because we've got a hormonal issue?
This could be really uneducated.
It's fine.
But why? It seems like doctors and society are more than happy to hand out contraceptive hormones. Why is there a scientific difference between the hormones used?
Yes, there's a big difference. There's a massive difference. And I've written about it a lot in my book. Some people will find it a bit annoying, but it's fact. So going back to history, if you don't mind me talking about history, but it puts it into perspective. So when they were making hormones initially, it was actually for women who had low hormones, i.e. menopause. And they used to make the hormones from pregnant women's urine, but the tablets smelt quite a lot and they were quite hard. You have to have big volumes of urine and you could just buy it over the counter. So part of them working with a gynecologist, they worked with pharmaceutical companies and they had to make a type of hormone, but they couldn't use the same as our natural hormones because they had to make a drug. So they made a chemical form, so a different chemical structure hormone, and they started giving it as HRT, but they wanted to give it to more women. And so women obviously are defined by their periods. So they wanted to give a hormone or a hormone substance that would stop periods. And so that's when they started experimenting, if you like, with contraceptive hormones. But they're chemicals, they're very different to natural hormones. And so that's why they're associated with risks, because our hormones have to fit the receptors in our cells, which are like a key and a lock. Each key has got the right lock, and then it unlocks, and you've got these lovely biological reactions that occur in the cells and in the nucleus and everything to keep us healthy. But the synthetic hormones are like a key that's not been cut properly. So they might fit into the receptor, but they won't unlock it, or they won't even fit in at all, or they might block the key. The key might jam in the lock, and then your natural hormones floating around won't have a chance. They can't get in. So what contraceptions do is they block the natural hormones working, but they also have quite an inflammatory response in the body as well. And they've not really been tested very well in women, but we know that they're associated with a small, but it is a risk of clot and stroke and heart disease and cancers, whereas the natural hormones aren't associated with any of that. So you're right, Ben, it's absolutely crazy. Like my 14-year-old's been offered contraception for her heavy periods. Thankfully, she said no. I'm 55 and 6 weeks ago I asked my GP if I could get some HRT and I'm still waiting for a response. But the risk to her is a lot higher than the risk of me taking hormones. But a lot of doctors don't realise that because they're called hormone contraception. But they're not. If you had low protein and you wanted to have some chicken to just get more protein, would you roast a chicken or would you buy chicken flavour crisps? I'd like to think that you would have some meat. You know, whereas chicken flavour crisps don't have any chicken in as far as I'm aware. And it's the same with the synthetic hormones. You know, they're completely different structure. So they're not hormones, but they do stop periods. And they in fact, they've never been tested properly for contraception, but they do seem to work as contraceptives. So we're sort of giving these women, you know, millions of women globally, this synthetic chemical, calling it a hormone, which is fine. And I'm not against contraceptives at all, but women need to be aware of choices. But it seems really weird that we can do that, but suddenly women want HRT to replace their missing hormones in a physiological way with the same biochemical structure as our own hormones. And we're being told, oh, no, we can't.
Because and that, the misinformation, that, Louise, misinformation, I mean, the FDA's recent announcement has been, you know, absolutely wonderful,
well,
fantastic
Well, it has, but, you know,
news.
The silence was quite deafening in the UK about it.
Yeah.
I actually was invited to go to the conference, and it was, and then the day before they said, oh, you're not a US citizen, you have to apply 28 days before you come. And I thought, oh, no. So I went to a follow-up Zoom meeting, actually, and lots of people, you know, the people on the board I know on the panel, and they did an amazing job. And it was very instrumental, very emotional, actually, and actually very reassuring for people because they've heard me talk about how safe hormones are for many years. But actually, when you've got the FDA, with all their scientific rigor, you know, saying exactly the same, that basically, especially estrogen is safe and it's associated with a lower risk of breast cancer, reduction of heart disease, dementia, stroke, osteoporosis. And, you know, they even said millions of women have suffered by not having hormones. So in my mind, why isn't that in first, you know, headline news of every newspaper the next day should have said that?
Well, no, it was Brooklyn Beckham's mum dancing at the wedding was more important news than trying to help women. It's like you hear a bang, that's my head hitting the floor.
Absolutely.
So just to pick up on something that you said a minute ago. So I thought we were coming on a curve of people doing better, but it sounds like women have dropped off.
So when the WHI, the Women's Health Initiative study, came out in 2002, HRT prescribing fell off a cliff. Before that, it was a really sort of opt-out rather than opt-in treatment. You know, people came, they had symptoms, go on HRT, you know. And then everyone got scared. And the study was using the wrong type of hormone. It was your chicken flavor crisps hormone, really, for the wrong women. And it wasn't analyzed properly. It just went straight to the media. But everyone just went, oh, my God, let's stop HRT. And so a few years ago, HRT prescribing was about 10%. And it's been increasing. There's the, you know, I work very hard with Kate Muir on the Divina program. So this Divina effect, people often say, it went up to 14%. But post-Panorama, the last year, it's plateaued. It might have gone to 15%. But we know in areas of deprivation and areas of with ethnic minority groups, in it's a lot lower. So it's still less than half. In the US, it was about 40% of menopausal women, and it's about 4% now. You know, I'm going to Bulgaria tomorrow, and I don't think anyone prescribes hormones. It's certainly no women get testosterone there.
In an ideal world, in an ideal world, would 100% of women going through these things have the medical help?
It's a great question. So 100% of women who want to take hormones should have them available for them. Whether that's 14% or 44 or 84, it's irrelevant in my mind. We know there are more benefits than risks. We know from the guidelines and the evidence, hormones are first-line treatment for symptoms, but also there's a lot of evidence that they reduce risk of all inflammatory conditions, which means cardiovascular disease and dementia, which are number two killers of women globally. Also osteoporosis, which one in two menopausal women will get if they don't take hormones. Cancers are all inflammatory conditions, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, neurodegenerative diseases such as multiple sclerosis, motor neuron disease, Parkinson's disease, inflammatory bowel disease. You know, the list goes on, and these will all reduce. Autoimmune diseases will reduce. But it's a choice. You know, I often say to people, because they think all I'm doing is like pushing hormones, and it's like you can choose if you exercise or not. Like, or you can choose if you smoke or not. As a doctor, I don't judge anyone for anything they do or don't do. They just really should have the education to know. So, for example, for me as a 55-year-old menopausal woman, if I stop taking my hormones, I'll have increased bone turnover. I have a 1 in 2 chance of osteoporosis. I am actually petrified of osteoporosis of my spine because I've doctored so many people with osteoporosis of their spine, and they lose their independence, they lose their mobility, they're in a lot of pain because they have these microfractures of their spine. They're curved, they can't reach the cupboard, they can't get out of the bath. I don't want to be dependent on my husband as I age. So it's a personal choice. You know, that's what I want to do. Of course I do weight-bearing exercise, of course I eat properly, but I've still got this accelerated bone loss without hormones and more inflammation. So it really is a choice. But something that occurs in 1 in 2 menopausal women, i.e. osteoporosis. And HRT is licensed as a treatment to prevent osteoporosis. Even if that was all it did, you'd think, actually, that's really good, because 1 in 3 women get osteoporotic hip fracture, which costs the NHS about £3 billion a year. And 20% of women after an osteoporotic hip fracture die. So it's a worse prognosis than most cancers, most other conditions. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's an old person's condition, don't worry. But you only need to go to an A&E department on an icy day and you see it's always the women with their fractured hips blocking the beds, you know?
I think it's really sad as well that there's so much sort of misconception about one of my ladies I coach. She's 70. And during her period, she's decided that she wanted to go and get some HRT from her GP. And her GP said, absolutely not. You're far too old for this. Again, another misconception. But, you know, she kind of, and she wouldn't have it anyway. She actually went to your clinic, by the way.
Good.
In the end, and got given HRT, and she's been on it, and it's been really, really helped her. I mean, as a coach, watching her ride, it's been
amazing.
It's just been transformational in her riding. Bearing in mind, she's 70. She's now 73, 74.
Is that a transformational in a mental way or a physical way?
Yeah,
Steph,
she's
sorry.
Mood-wise, in terms of her confidence, in terms of her able to move her body better. She just seems to be, you know, musculoskeletally easier. You know, her hips aren't so tight. She had really tight hips. And the other thing that happened recently was she's been having, I didn't realize this, lots of UTIs. Mm. And she was like, well, I keep being given antibiotics by the doctor. So in the end, she's kind of she did her research. And I said, well, have you tried, you know, maybe it's a hormonal thing. And she ended up demanding that she had some vaginal estrogen to use. And it cleared it literally within days. And she had been given antibiotics after antibiotics after and obviously as a rider we are more susceptible to those kind of things. I just thought, I've said so many people of that age group are under that ideal that they cannot go and get help, and particularly when you're thinking about osteoporosis and things that happen to us when we get older. I just don't know, how do we get the message out there? You're doing great work, Louise, but there's only one of you. Okay. I mean, thankfully you're on this podcast, which is wonderful, and we can try and spread the word through, but it just shouldn't be this way. It should be so much more organized, shouldn't it?
And well, we're just starting a campaign, which will be out when this podcast comes out, called #NotMe. So it's about, you know, are you going to put yourself at risk of osteoporosis? #NotMe. Are you going to watch your mum suffer? #NotMe. Because it's got to be a bit of a movement. We've got to help each other in this. And, you know, as a doctor, as I've already said, I learn from my patients. So if I don't know something, I've got two choices. I refer it on to somebody or refer the patient on, or I learn myself. Sometimes I see people with really obscure conditions that I'll never see again, or they need quite obscure operation. I'm not going to learn how to do that. I will refer them to a person to have the appropriate investigations and treatment. But if it's something that affects 51% of the population, then it's inexcusable for me as a doctor not to know. And if I have 10 people every day coming to see me, I should go, oh shit, you know what? I need to learn this, because I can't keep referring these people on. But a few years ago, I went to the Royal College of GPs, because I'm a fellow of the Royal College of GPs. I've been one for quite a few years now. And I said, look, there's a bit of, this is about 3 years ago. I said, I'm really concerned because I'm hearing some really negative things about my work and I really want to know what's going on. And they said, well, your social media stuff really needs to stop, Louise, because too many women now are asking for hormones to the detriment of other appointments. And they said, it won't be long until the truth will be out and we'll know which side of history you're on. And I said, but don't shoot the messenger, actually, because these women, once they're on hormones, will not be coming back with their pains, their urinary tract infections, their migraines, their whatever. And so it might be short-term pain, but it's for longer-term gain. And it's not my problem the system isn't set up. And it's really interesting that people seem so resistant to helping. And also, you know, we've got guidelines. I mean, they are a guide. Obviously, we can individualize care. But even the guidelines say we should be giving hormones. So it's not like I'm giving, you know, some weird treatment that no one else is doing.
So is the issue more that doctors won't give out the hormones than the general public? Like, the general public seem to be educated enough now from what you're saying to want.
There's a real shift, actually. So I was saying to someone this morning, when I started my clinic, I was quite interesting, or not really, quite funny maybe. 10 years ago when I started my clinic, I was just doing one day a week. I was just renting a room in a hospital, and that's all I wanted to do. I never thought there was such a big problem. But women would come to see me and they'd say, oh, Dr. Newson, I've got all these symptoms. They may be my hormones, but there's no way I want HRT because I've read about the breast cancer, everything else. So what else can I do? And I'd spend the whole consultation telling them all about hormones. And then in the end, they go, okay, maybe I'll try them. And then 3 months later, they come out and go, wow, I wish I'd seen you a few years ago. And so a lot of my work is really just giving people knowledge because I've worked as a medical writer for many, many years. But women and men actually are getting it a lot quicker than the doctors. And I don't really understand, because in medicine, if you're not sure, you're a very sort of safe doctor, or not safe, but you're just a sort of conservative doctor, I suppose. You just look at the guidelines and you work out of a box. They're not even doing that. You know, they are ignoring the guidelines. And the guidelines are very clear that not just HRT is first line treatment, but we should individualize care. And we should individualize the hormones as well. And so lots of people have been saying to me, well, you don't work out of guidelines. Well, show me the guidelines I don't work out of, because the guidelines are very clear that we individualize care, but there's also some guidelines called shared decision making. And so those are really important guidelines, I think, as a doctor, for anything we do, that we share decisions with patients. Even if a patient wants something that you perceive to be more at risk or not appropriate, the patients can be really involved. And it's not the way we practiced medicine in the 90s when I qualified, but it should be. You're allowed a choice. And this has sort of been taken away. You know, one of my patients saw her GP recently to try and get some hormones. And she said, no, you're not having those. I think you need to eat more fruit and pray. No, it's 2026. Like, why did you go to medical school to give that advice? You know,
eat more fruit and pray.
Yeah.
This might be the title of the podcast.
Film, yeah.
I feel I have Dr. Louise Newson, eat more fruit and pray. Like, what's the, I'm sorry, but what's the...
This is what beggars believe, you know, and we're collecting actually on Balance app, you know, my free app, stories from women. And, excuse me, they're just awful. And it's in every country.
Oh my God, I thought I had some horror stories, but that is it. I've had a gynecologist prescribe me antidepressants, but only for the few days before my period. And I was like, I thought I knew about antidepressants. I thought you had to take them over a long period of time for them to work. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're the doctor. and then prescribe me painkillers for my period pain. I was like, okay, which then made me feel worse. I've had a male gynecologist tell me that my only other option to get rid of my PMDD was a hysterectomy or the coil. Mm. I was like, these feel like very aggressive. And I had two very, shall we say, traumatic births with my children. And I said to the man, I really don't want anything else going up there, because getting two children out of there was really traumatic. And his response was, well, you can just come in and I can take it out quickly if you don't like it. It literally, like, and then I listened to you on the Chris Evans and went down the PMDD route, and then still couldn't get progesterone or anything. And luckily I found this wonderful lady in Squamish where I live, and I walked into her and I said all my things that I've told a million other doctors. I've seen naturopaths who've given me iron infusions, and I've seen everyone, everyone. It was only when I heard you on Chris Evans, a light bulb went off, and I was like, even though I was saying it was my hormones this whole time. Oh, you can go on the pill. The pill doesn't work for me. It makes me feel awful. Anyway, so I walked into this my wonderful doctor now, and she had a tray full of different, what I saw as medicines, but I now know there were different ways of taking hormones. And she went, these are your options. It's not been overnight, and I'm only just really seeing the benefits. I feel like I trust this woman. And I'm wondering if a lot of the women who kind of come and go, this hasn't worked for me, is because you have to stick with it a little bit, and you have to go on a journey with it. It's not going to work overnight. I don't know if I'm right in saying this, Louise. You've got to stick with it a little bit. You've got to have a bit of persistence. Am I right?
I mean, everyone's different, and it is about individualizing doses and types of hormones. And some people respond very quickly. And some people do take longer. When these hormones work on our cells, they have effects throughout the cells. And like I say, in the nucleus, where we've got our genes as well. So our hormones can improve the way our genetic structure works. And that takes a while, you know, okay. And the cells have got to relearn. But it's looking at the balance of all three hormones as well. So a lot of women, like I say, with PMDD have very low progesterone, and we often increasingly actually give progesterone as a pessary. So we can use higher doses that can get just absorbed through the mucosa of the vagina or the rectum to get into the bloodstream. And that can make a huge difference. And testosterone is also a very underrated hormone that can be very effective too. And it's the balance of all three hormones can make a difference. Someone reached out to me a while ago who'd had a hysterectomy and a ovaries removed for a non-cancer reason. And she was in her 30s and she was plunged into this awful depression. And her doctor had given her some estrogen patches. And she didn't feel any better after 3 months. So she had waited. And they said, oh, it's because you're grieving your ovaries. You need to go and see a psychiatrist.
Or eat fruit and pray.
Yeah, precisely. So her estradiol level was nothing. She didn't have any progesterone or testosterone because that had gone in the bin with her ovaries. So, you know, it is about having the right dose and type. But the other thing is women are quite intuitive. And, you know, there's a lot of shit that gets thrown at us all the time. And we often know whether it's just because we're in that sandwich generation, in inverted commas, and we're struggling too much, or if it's our hormones. And if we think it's our hormones, we're probably right. On that long questionnaire that's on my Balance app, one of the questions is that you just don't feel like yourself. And that feels a bit weird and a bit sort of airy-fairy, but actually a lot of people go, yeah, I know how I normally am and this isn't me. You know, like if you're tired because you've had a late night, you know that you'll feel better after a good night's sleep. But this is like, it's a different tiredness. It's like one that you know it when you've had it. But I think this is the other thing about just listening and believing yourself and finding a doctor that understands. And like you say, Jenny, you've got a doctor who does understand you. And that's the biggest thing people, when they come to our clinic, they thank me. And I haven't actually done anything because it's the first consultation. But what I have done is I've acknowledged them, I've listened to them, and I've believed them. And that sounds so ridiculous. And that's what makes me so sad as well. Because as a doctor, I went into medicine to help people. And it's not all about drugs to help people. It's about listening and being empathic and understanding and sharing your knowledge with the people and not just being this sort of unidirectional, I'm the most important person in the room, you must listen to me and here's the prescription. And some people feel quite threatened about that, and you can hear that in some people's social media or whatever when they get quite upset about these women, how dare they get better on testosterone because should never work. And it's like, hang on, it's a natural hormone, of course it should work.
Can I ask a question? So obviously so many people have asked us questions that they want to ask you. Why is it that we cannot test for this? Why is it we can't go into a doctor and go, yeah, I think my hormones are shit? Why is that so hard?
So it depends what we do. If we're still having periods, then our hormones are changing all the time. And so if you're perimenopausal or if you've got PMDD, then you could do 10 different blood tests on 10 different days and you'll get 10 different results. Okay. If they're abnormal, it can be quite useful. But if they're normal, they're just normal at the time they were taken. And what worries me, I see lots of women who've had normal blood results and they're told, oh, it's not your hormones. Well, that's just rubbish. So that's why they have to be interpreted with caution. If someone hasn't had a period for many years and they're, you know, in their 50s or 60s, their hormone levels are going to be low. Like, don't waste your time and money having hormones, if you see what I mean. We often do blood tests, though, because we often look for other reasons as well. Like, I don't want to be saying, oh, you're tired because you've got low testosterone, and find someone's got really low ferritin, low iron, or they've got low vitamin D, or they've got an underactive thyroid. You know, there's lots of reasons why people can have symptoms. We often do blood tests to monitor response to treatment, though. So if women are using the estrogen as a patch or gel, then we'll often do an estradiol level, because if they're still getting symptoms, I want to know, is it because they aren't on the right dose of hormones, or is it because they've got something completely different? You know, if someone's got palpitations, I don't want to be missing a heart problem. If their level's low, then we often either increase the dose or we might change the formulation to try and get it absorbed through the skin a bit better. And the same with testosterone, but it's only a guide. You know, I actually, sounds a bit weird, but I am a bit weird, but about a year or so ago, I did my blood test. I got someone to do it 10 times in a day. And yeah, I know, it's just mad. But I want to see, I've been on the same dose of hormones for many years. And as everyone knows since Panorama, that I use a higher than licensed dose of estrogen because my skin's quite tough and its patches don't stick on very well. So I thought, let's just see, I have interest. And my levels of estradiol really change throughout the day. And my levels of testosterone So there was one point in the day that my testosterone level was 3.2, which is a little bit higher than you'd expect. And another time in the day, my level was 1.2, which is lower than you'd expect. So if I was interpreting each blood test, I might say, oh, that level's a bit high, reduce your dose. Or I might say, that level's a bit low, increase your dose. Actually, what I do in medicine is I talk to the patient. And if I was my own patient, which clearly I'm not, but if you see what I mean, I would say, how are you feeling? And I'd say, I'm fine. I haven't grown a moustache or beard. I don't think I'm on too much. I don't think I'm on too low because I feel fine. So I would say, okay, well, your blood test is slightly up, slightly low, but let's just carry on and we'll repeat the blood test in a few months' time. So that's where I worry that people just have a blood test and they're looking at like A level. And then a lot of blood tests now, it's just maddening because they only flag if they're raised. So I see a lot of women with a testosterone level of 0.8. Anything with zero in front is low, of course. And the computer says normal. So the doctor says normal because it's only set up to like say abnormal if it's raised. So lots of women message me and say, I'm really tired. I've got no stamina. I've got no libido. I feel dreadful. Joint pain, headaches. My doctor says my testosterone is normal. The level is 0.6. So what? Well, it's not normal, is it? So you just have to be careful with blood tests, you know, and just be, you know, interpret them with caution, really.
Why?
As well, I had sorry, Ben. I was going to say, I go on a daily dose of testosterone, and it's number one. It's trying to work out the tiny little pea amount from having a little sachet that you then got to divide into 8 pieces because you can't got to try and work it. And hope you don't press too hard so the first wind squirts out and you get too much. It's just a nightmare, isn't it, that you can't actually deliver it in the right doses in any accuracy, which is crazy. But there we go. It's fine at the moment. It works, and it has completely. Again, this has put me back to normal. I feel normal. But what was interesting is I went for a blood test, and I had no idea that not to take the testosterone the night before. No one had told me. So, you know, that is something else. It's just this information, isn't it, that around these blood tests to sort of like, well, actually don't have your testosterone the night before, you then have a blood test the following day, because obviously it will elevate the levels and potentially just look a tiny bit higher than normal. But, you know, you learn these things, don't you, as you go along, unless people say
it. Yeah, and it depends on your clinician. Sometimes people still use it the day before. It's more if you rub it on your arm and then you can get contamination. So, but again, that's why interpreting them with caution. I was on holiday a couple of years ago. One of my really good friends phoned me in a massive panic. She said, I've got a patient who's just come in and her testosterone is 6.2. We've had a practice meeting. We don't know what to do. Da, da, da. I said, well, how's the patient? Oh, well, she's fine. I was like, well, just repeat the test in a couple of weeks or months' time. Like, she probably used it just before she had the blood test. Like, it's really, and the other thing is that, like I've already said, most symptoms affect our brain. The blood test is what's in the blood, not what's in the brain. And so, again, we can be falsely reassured or falsely worried by just something in the blood. You know, so that's why you just have to be careful. But also, you know, lots of things in medicine we don't do. We don't do a blood test or a scan to get the diagnosis. You know,
yeah.
I've already said the art of history taking. If a woman thinks it's related to her hormones, then why do I need to do a blood test? Why can't I just give a therapeutic trial and say, look, I'm going to try you on some progesterone and we'll see if you improve. If you don't, we'll either think about the dose or we'll think about a completely different diagnosis. We do that a lot in medicine.
Say, though, the progesterone, when I first went on it, I went skiing. We live in Canada and I'm learning to ski, by the way, so it's very ungraceful, and farted my way down the slopes. The first few weeks on progesterone gave me terrible wind. So any woman who's starting it, I'm going through this journey with you people. That's what happened to me. So if you're farting, stick with it. That does go. I don't know if that's a normal side effect, but that's what happened to me.
Yeah, I mean, our hormones, well, because you're having it orally, of course, it can have an effect on your GI system, but also our gut microbiome can change quite a lot when we have hormones, usually in a positive way, but obviously it could change things in certain ways.
But then those are things like, I love hearing like from different people like Davina and these women who come on, but I feel like I don't know if it's resonating, this podcast, because I'm literally on the journey. You hear from so many women who are through the other side. HRT worked for me, but I'd never heard about progesterone making someone fart. I was like, so anyone's got any questions of someone going through it, just ping me a DM. I've probably been through it at the moment. And also, no one tells you, forget to take your progesterone and you're on estrogen and you get a period. Like that was something no one told me. I was like, oh, bloody hell, I've got another period in the middle of Thailand wearing white trousers. Yeah, note to self, people, don't forget to take your progesterone if you're on estrogen. Ben, you look like you've got a million questions.
No, so one thing that's come up a lot in the questions today, so we put a post out to all our followers saying, what do you want to know? And one of the big questions that I've asked multiple times is, why does it seem easy to get estrogen and progesterone, but so blummin' hard to get a doctor in the UK to let you have testosterone?
Good question.
I don't know. Well, even progesterone's quite hard. And I don't understand it, because I was taught the same, that estrogen is a female hormone, testosterone is a male hormone, and progesterone you only need if a woman has a womb. Now, I've already said that all three hormones are made in our brain. They're neurosteroids. They work as neurotransmitters. They have really important anti-inflammatory effects on every cell in our body. So I'm not really sure. Well, I am a bit when you go back to history, but the people that were testing on finding the contraception and so forth, they made the synthetic estrogen the first thing they did. And so the focus was just on estrogen. And then they thought, oh, if we give the synthetic progesterone, it will stop bleeding. And then that's brilliant, because if women don't bleed, they're not likely to get pregnant. So they diverted away from everything. And then when they discovered testosterone, they quickly made synthetic testosterones, which, again, think of the chicken flavor crisps. They were the chicken flavor crisps of testosterone. They were injectables. Some of them were tablets. They caused liver disease. They caused clot, heart attacks. They caused weird body shapes. And now there's, I think, more than 300 different types of synthetic testosterone you could probably get in your local gyms and various places. They're not testosterone at all. So then people got scared away from testosterone. But there were studies even in the 1940s showing that women who were prescribed testosterone had more energy, they had better sense of well-being, they had better quality of life. But somehow it all got lost in this testosterone, you know, sort of scare almost. And then again, and I am blaming gynecologists actually, because when people were put off hormones, then they decided that they only needed estrogen after having their ovaries removed. They used to give testosterone implants, but then they stopped. And then testosterone is not licensed for women. And somehow that makes people quite scared if you're prescribing something that's not licensed. But what we forget as doctors often, and the lay people often don't know, is that lots of things we prescribe are off license. Most medications for children are not licensed, but we know they're effective, so we prescribe them. But because doctors haven't been taught that testosterone is a female hormone, in fact, it's the most biologically active hormone we have as women, then they just forget it's needed. And then because the studies in testosterone have been very few, most of the studies that are randomized controlled studies or bigger studies have just looked at libido. And then sometimes people think libido is just an optional extra, like we can just, like, it's not really a big issue for women to have a libido. And so they've sort of shot themselves in the foot a bit, because now it's getting ridiculous, because we know that the hormone is really important. We know it's very safe. We know that obviously it's still not licensed to women, although there is a licensed preparation in Australia and in the UK, although it's not available in the UK yet. But in the meantime, over all this debacle about testosterone, the symptoms of testosterone deficiency are low mood, memory problems, fatigue, muscle joint pains. Lots of women have been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. And there's been lots of drugs that have come into play. So there's lots of painkillers. There are lots of antidepressants. There's other drugs. So it's sort of been forgotten. And now people just think testosterone is some sort of drug that we shouldn't be using. In fact, there was something in The Guardian I read that came out yesterday and saying these social media influencers are persuading women to take testosterone. Whereas this is Professor blah, blah, I won't tell you the person's name, talking about how the dangers of testosterone. Now, this, you know, it's like, but then it comes back again about choice. Like, I don't mind about testosterone or not. Like, I feel very strongly about it, because if I wasn't taking it, I wouldn't be working. It's really switched on my brain again. But I don't feel it's fair that we can't choose our own hormone. And the other drugs are given a lot worse. Antidepressants are associated with a risk of osteoporosis, dementia, addiction, reduced orgasms, actually. So if I want to have better sex and that's all it was for, does it really matter? Do you see what's happening?
It matters to our followers, I promise you. Because another one, a question that came up a lot was, I want my libido back, actually.
Yeah. Totally agree. And, you know, I do a lot of work with men as well, actually. And a lot of men are really struggling by not having sex. And I'm sorry to talk about sex on your podcast, but it's important for a lot of people. Yeah. And, you know, if these men are not getting sex, it's not just the act of sex. They're not getting any intimacy. They're not getting any warmth, any love, any, you know, then men often think, oh God, it's me. What have I done? And I feel like actually for women, why can't we enjoy sex? Why is it so? I remember going to a conference a few years ago now, and they were talking about testosterone. They were unpicking some data from one study and saying women have one or two more sexual encounters every week if they take testosterone. And a lot of the audience just giggled like they were children. And I was like, well, great, bring it on. I don't mind having sex twice more in a week and it's good. You know, it just seems really weird that we can't be thinking about it. And as you know, like if you're a professional sports player, you're not allowed testosterone. It's banned. Like, so that means the authorities are saying to women with hyperactive sexual desire disorder due to low testosterone, sorry, love, you can never have an orgasm again. And I think this is a basic human rights problem, actually.
It's really important for our sport because sport it's sex integrated. And so you've got men competing against women and we should absolutely be on a level playing field.
You should be. And I was, we're doing some work actually in this area with someone and, I was trying to explain to the lawyers we're working with, it's a bit like if someone had asthma and they have an inhaler, all you're doing is getting their lungs back to how they should be. You're not giving them something that's going to make their lungs hyperinflated and they'll be able to breathe more, you know, and perform better. And it's the same with the low testosterone. All you're doing is replacing what's missing to improve symptoms, quality of life and future health. You're not going to give them any extra advantage. There'll be probably advantage of what they are now because they're below par. But why should women have to, you know, hang up their saddle or hang up their, you know, whatever, running shoes because they've got low testosterone that the authorities won't let them take?
If you heard a big bang then, that was my husband running out the door to tell my doctor to prescribe me testosterone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bit that seems insane when you're talking about history is that the introduction of synthetic hormones for contraception was described as the sexual revolution. It made everywhere more productive. Women could be more out in the workforce. They could go for those high-paid jobs now. But actually, this seems like the HRT, the treatment for the menopause, is that same thing, but at the other end of your life.
Well, it can tackle that brain fog.
It can tackle that anxiety.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's not just at the other end of your life. So, because we all have hormonal changes, and also one in 30 women have low hormones, so they're menopausal at an age below 40. Now, my youngest patient was menopausal when she was 12. Her ovaries never developed, so she was menopausal at school. But my 23-year-old daughter has quite severe PMDD, and I've done a podcast with her, so I'm not breaking any confidentiality.
And I'm going to listen to that
one. She also has migraines. She has quite a few health problems, but her life has been saved literally by taking hormones. And I see quite a few of her friends as patients. She's a musician. A lot of her friends are quite neurodivergent, very creative, very clever. But a lot of them are not performing to their best the days before their periods. One of her friends is a French horn player who can't play for 3 days a month because she wets herself when she's playing her instrument. And Jessica's like, that's your hormones. Go and see my mom. And a lot of the people now I'm speaking to, when I've been treating them, go, Louise, I just don't know how to thank you because I didn't know it was legal to feel well every day of my cycle. I didn't know that I could exercise every day. I didn't know I could sleep every day. Although I love my work, I love it even more when I help younger people because it's their whole future that is changing in front of them. And they're helping each other and they're teaching each other because they're not going on to the synthetic hormones, which basically give them a chemical menopause, which stop their hormones working and make them feel worse. Because there's a big cycle of women now who are younger, who go on contraception and then they go on antidepressants, and then they go on, you know, they get endometriosis, they get very inflammatory, they put on weight, they're not performing the way that they should. And it's a big chemical experiment, actually, giving hormones, as in the synthetic hormones. And so women are understanding, you know, a lot of women with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, actually have low progesterone. A lot of teenagers with heavy periods, painful periods, they have low progesterone. And so just giving them, you know, when they're younger, natural progesterone can make a huge difference. And it's just basic science, what I'm saying here, but it's been lost in the sort of mist of pharma, really, and synthetic hormones.
I'm almost in tears here because you've basically just summed up my life. Had heavy periods, got put on the pill didn't agree with me. Like, I've got polycystic ovaries. Like, I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of so many women. Like, you've literally just said my life story in about 10 seconds. So, and this is a question for me, but hopefully it's answering up for other people. I've gone to my doctor and she's prescribed me progesterone. How do I know if that's synthetic, or how do we then become informed on what the drugs are we're getting? If that's not a stupid question.
No, there's a lot of information on my Balance app. It's usually quite straightforward. If it's pure estrogen as a patch or gel, then it usually is estradiol, which is a natural. If the progesterone is called micronized progesterone or progesterone orally, then it usually is the natural progesterone. If it's a pessary, that like cyclogest, it's usually progesterone. It's all the progestogens, which mean a synthetic progesterone in contraception, they are all synthetic. You can't get a natural body identical a contraceptive. The combination HRT that has like a patch that's estrogen and progestogen together, or a combination patch, they've always got a synthetic progestogen in them.
Okay, that's really interesting and so clear. And because mine literally just says, it's not even got a chemical name to it, it just says progesterone on it.
Yeah, then it's probably just pure progesterone. And then the marina coil, so the progesterone, they often call progesterone coils, but they're not the progestin, so they're synthetic progestogen. The marina coil supposedly only works locally on the womb, but it gets through the blood supply of the womb and gets into the rest of the circulation. So some people have side effects. So often someone has a coil, we will still give them, if they want it, the natural progesterone as well.
Wow, that's so interesting. So, Louise, I'm aware that we're up to an hour and we've taken up so much of your time already. Could you just list off, I know we've said it before, Steph and I and Ben, but so many of the people, even now, I like bang my head and I said to a friend, like I said the other day, another friend, oh, do you think you might be a bit something with your hormones? Again, her answer was, I don't have hot flushes. How many symptoms can you list quickly that might be a sign?
I'm not even going to answer that if you don't mind, because if you think about it in a different way, it's not just about symptoms, it's about health risks. So let's think about the risks of not taking hormones, regardless of your symptoms. So if you have hormonal changes, even PMDD, we know there's a greater risk of all those inflammatory conditions that I mentioned, heart disease, osteoporosis, diabetes, so forth. So your risk of having diseases is a lot greater by not having hormones. So that's where you've got to be thinking about it. It's not about symptoms or not. And I think take the symptoms away. You know, think if someone had raised blood pressure, most people don't have symptoms. We treat raised blood pressure to reduce future risk of heart attack and stroke. And that's quite well accepted in clinical practice. And even if someone's got an increased risk by about 20%, you would still give them a blood-lowering treatment. I've already said 1 in 2 women without hormones will have osteoporosis. So that's 50%. You know, that's a lot higher risk. So not having hormones will increase your risk of these diseases. If you're happy with that, that's fine. It's a bit like, you know, if you don't exercise, you've got a risk of diseases. We always know people that have never exercised at all and they're fine. There's loads of really bitter, twisted, quite miserable women who never have sex out there who tell you they're fine without hormones. But it's a choice, you know. And the other thing also, just to add, though, is there's no harm in just trying some hormones to see if they help. You know, they only last in the body the day that you have them. You're in control of them. So you can try them and see. And like the 70-whatever lady that you've seen, she didn't know how much of her joint pain was related to her hormones or not. She tries them for 3 to 6 months. She doesn't feel any better. She can stop taking them. Yeah. I think that's the other thing. People are really, they've been so brainwashed about the risks of hormones. Firstly, if they have body identical hormones, there's a no risk of cancers, there's no risk of clot, there's no risk of stroke, because you're just replacing light with light. So there are only benefits. But also the risks of not having hormones are greater than any risks of taking any type of hormones. So that's just something to sort of just, it's a bit of a mind twist really to think about.
And then a lot of, when we spoke about trying to get you on the podcast before, we did get a few messages. Oh, it's been on Panorama. She's the worst person in the world. I don't know how you put up with the amount of shit that gets thrown at you, quite frankly. You seem like a very strong, amazing woman.
Yeah.
I did my research, so I knew that it was a lot of misinformation. I know you put a statement out on Instagram, but could you just kind of give us the facts, as it were?
Yeah, sure. The fact is I'm not as strong as people think, actually. And I, and my children prop me up, actually. I think when shit things happen, you've got to grow stronger or you go under. I learned that when my dad died when I was 9. But one of the things about Panorama is, and this is just saying you as it is really, is that some gynecologists found like 4 patients out of thousands who weren't very happy. And I can't talk about those patients because I'm not going to break any confidentiality. But the gynecologists were trying to blame me for prescribing dangerously high doses of hormones. Now, I've already said a dose needs to be individualized. You also, if anyone follows you me on Instagram, you'll see every so often I put my patch that crinkles on. When we try and get a drug through the skin, and there's not many that go through the skin, but estradiol is one, it's all about the absorption through the skin. And that depends on the location, the type of skin, the thickness of skin, the temperature of the skin, any subcutaneous fat, the stickiness of the, you know, the glue contains estradiol. So my patches do not stick on very well. They crinkle. Somebody prescribed them for me 10 years ago who was a gynecologist, or still is a gynecologist, and gave me a higher dose than licensed, which made sense because I was still feeling rubbish after 3 months of being on the maximum licensed dose. My estradiol level was low. So I learned from him, and that's what I do for some people. I don't start them on a higher dose, but if they're still struggling with symptoms, I can't. You can put me in a bath of gel. It doesn't get through my skin. It just slides off. So the patches are the best of a bad lot, but I use more than one. So they were saying that I'm using these dangerously high doses of hormones. The British Menopause Society, which is a charity, it's not regulatory, stripped me from being a specialist about a year before the Panorama program because they had these worries about me. They said they were seeing more women with bleeding. I said, have you seen more women with cancer? They said, no, we haven't, but we might do in the future. And we're concerned. And I said, well, why can, I'm not going to mention his name, but the person that prescribed for me, how can he do it? And I can't. And they said, well, Louise, you're just a GP and he's a gynecologist. So I did ask them which part of my brain is different to his, because I've got a first class honours degree in pathology. I've got honours in my medicine exams. I've got distinction in all my other exams. And they said, but Louise, you can't scan women if they bleed. And I said, but I have someone who scans in my clinic and I can interpret results and I can decide who to refer. Since Panorama, we've published data in peer-reviewed journals, one showing that we've known actually for 50-odd years that absorption of estrogen is different, and about 20% of our patients need a higher dose to get the optimum amount through their skin. And the part two, really, we've looked at people who bleed, who've had a scan, to see, do they bleed more? Is there more pathology in their womb if they have a higher dose of estrogen and not the higher dose of progesterone or whatever? Firstly, we've had no cases of cancer of the womb, and my clinic's been going for a long time. But we've also found that the dose of either estrogen or progesterone is not relevant to the thickness of the lining of the womb or bleeding. I'm not aware of anyone else who's published any of this data since Panorama or even before Panorama. So it's very much hearsay. It's very much a personal attack because they stripped me of being a specialist with them. I have employed lots of doctors, dozens of doctors in my clinic. Many of those have been British Menopause Society specialists. None of them have been stripped of their license, and we all practice in the same way. But also to reassure your listeners, I'm still registered with the General Medical Council. I have an annual appraisal, and my appraisal company are incredibly supportive and very complimentary about my work. I've been investigated. Well, I haven't been investigated. I've been had complaints to the GMC. They've never done a full investigation because the preliminary inquiries have all been fine. They're not worried about the way that I practice medicine. And so I still feel very strongly that what I'm doing is right. The vast majority of my patients are very happy with what I give. There are always going to be some people that are unhappy just because I'm breathing, because I, whatever, there's, you know, that's just life, isn't it? But the other thing is, we've just published some data, I alluded to earlier, about suicide risk. And one in six patients in our clinic are suicidal. Taking the right dose and type of hormones, our research has shown, reduces suicidality by 92%. You know, one of the reasons I keep going is that I know that we're saving lives. You know, we can always worry about the little things. But the bigger thing is, the suicide rate is the highest it's ever been in women in their 40s and 50s. Postnatal depression leads to suicide. 82% of women with PMDD have suicidal thoughts, and about half of them self-harm. Lots of women who, and I do have support from women, who sort of recognize me or whatever, they say, thank you. You literally saved my life. And it's usually because of the podcast or Balance app. So I'm not making money out of these people. I don't work with pharmaceutical companies. I don't have a hidden agenda. But I actually don't want my children to struggle in the way that I'm struggling to get hormones. Other people are struggling to get hormones. So I've been very reflective over the last year. I never expected anything like that to happen. You know, the editorial team for the Panorama were the same ones that edited Trump's video. I don't think the respect that we have for Panorama is quite the same as perhaps it was a few years ago. But what do? You either like go under or you keep going. And my children like just keep going, you just get back out there because you're changing lives and helping. And I do think if I had done something really wrong, someone would be producing some data by now, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm not doing anything that people didn't do before either, by the way, you know.
I've spoken, this is one of the reasons I love this podcast, is because I have my boys and I have people like Steph and the community around it. And I actually edited out a bit of our podcast that we recorded the first time when I went on my menopause rant, because I felt like I'd shared too much. But one of the things I said to the boys was, oh, I'm going to cry, was I feel like killing myself. And you are helping women not feel like this.
If you start, I'll start. And I don't want to cry. But I also went into medicine to help everybody. I've worked in some really deprived areas, including in prisons. And I was doing some volunteering work in prison, and they banned me from doing that. And everybody I met in prison has hormonal changes. And wherever you look, women are suffering. And it's quite, life's hard. Like for men and women, there's always things going on. So a lot of the information I do is free. If I was just running a clinic and making a fortune from the clinic, you could question what I was doing, but I'm really not. And I feel like very sad, because since the Panorama program, more people have been scared of hormones. Less GPs are prescribing it. We're hearing more fruit and prayer conversations. And women are the ones that are suffering. But it's not just women, like, you know, sons, partners, people at work. You know, it seems ridiculous. You know, I'm going to be talking quite a lot about Injustice of Women in my theatre tour that I'm doing starting April. And if any of you saw the last theatre tour, this one's going to be really quite bleak. There'll be a bit of humour, but it's called Breaking the Cycle. And we haven't broken the cycle of the damage that's been done to women. So I've been finding some quite harrowing slides and pictures of what's happened to women in the past. But it's no different now, actually. So we've got to shock and worry. And, you know, with emotions, you make changes, you know. I think that's what's really important.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Especially being a horsey type woman, horsey, I'm like, I can't, who do I tell that I feel like this? Mm-hmm. And like, everybody just tells me I'm depressed. And I'm like, I know I'm
not. You know, it's not. Yeah.
I just know there's a couple of days in this month where I don't want to be here, and I'm not finding, you don't find joy in anything.
Increase your hormones on those days. Yeah,
exactly. And when my doctor rings me every couple of months just to say, right, how's it going? Do we need to change anything? And I said to her the other day, for the last 2 months, there hasn't been a day I want to kill myself. So I know something is changing.
Amazing.
And it's just, and it feels ridiculous to say that. And I actually feel a bit relieved I've said that out loud, because I was like, how is this true? And I think that was one of the main things we got from questions.
It's really not ridiculous. And, you know, and my daughter obviously has PMDD, and she said to me, it's not just the 2 or 3 days that you feel like killing yourself, because you know you'll get better when your period comes, but the other days of the month, you're dreading those days
dreading
coming.
It, yeah.
You're every day, and then you can't believe it happens. And I think that's what's really interesting and but sad as well. And I was a medical advisor for Riot Women, which was on BBC, which is brilliant, with Sally Wainwright writing and producing it. And it starts with someone trying to hang herself. And when I went to the BAFTAs to watch the premiere with them all, I said, you know, was anyone shocked by having, you know, it opening like this? I said, no, because it resonated with all of us. And one of the young actors, who's only 25, came up to me and said, I'd like to thank you, Louise. I was like, why? And he said, well, because 10 years ago, my mum tried to hang herself and I was only 15 and no one taught me about periods. I didn't even know really what they were. I didn't know about hormones. And I think back now, like, she must have been going through something like this and I didn't really understand. And I wish I'd known that then. And so, like, for you to say it is really massive but really important, because I can't imagine many people will be going, oh, I bet she's making that up for attention. No one will be, because a lot of us will be thinking, yeah, I felt like that as well and I didn't know who to talk to. All I've been given is antidepressants. You know, one of my daughter's friends was given olanzapine when she was 15 for her PMDD, which is a heavy-duty antipsychotic medication, which then blocks your hormones working. So her period stopped and she was plunged into even more depression. And I said to her, did you talk to your psychiatrist about this? And she said, how could I talk to a psychiatrist about my periods? But I didn't know it was all connected. And she came off the olanzapine in secret. Her periods came back. She felt better for half the month, which is better than awful for all the months. You feel very isolated, and it's this isolation where having your community, like what you're doing, is really important, because then it's not just helping that individual, it's helping others. Like Ben will be thinking for female friends and colleagues and relatives, you know, it's and that's where I think things are going to make a change, because I can't make changes on my own. I'd be stupid to think I could.
I think with you, Ben, with your community, hearing you, because people follow Ben, because I'm not joking when I say this man is a true horseman and what he does with horses is quite magical. I'm not sure if you have the same effect on women, Ben. But to suddenly hear a chap like Ben speaking about this, which feels so left field, the response on your social media, Ben, it was so wonderful, wasn't it? And it was so positive. It was so lovely, wasn't it, to see the response. But also how scary that so many women, one of the main things I saw, Ben, on your post was, how do we get our GPs to listen to us, Louise? Like that.
So we've written about this on Balance App, actually. We've got more information about that, like questions to ask, what to do. The most important thing is to be prepared and maybe go with someone, go with a symptom questionnaire. So they don't have to ask you about symptoms at all then. And you just say, look, my conversation today is about how do I get HRT, maybe progesterone, estradiol, and testosterone prescribed for me. If the blood drains from their face, then they're probably not the right person to even talk to and say, look, I think I'm probably wasting your time. Who else can I see? No one wants to fall out with their doctor. And I don't think any doctor really wants to do a bad job. But if they're really resistant, then I would try and find someone else. Quite a few people come to our clinic maybe once or twice. GPs are really binary. They either go, great, you've been to that clinic, we'll carry on prescribing, or they go, how dare you go to that clinic, you know? And that's difficult. But it's also a lot easier to ask for treatment when you're on it. If you're on something and you know it's helping you, then it's a lot easier to say. Because otherwise, people might go, oh, well, you probably don't need testosterone. Whereas if you say, do you know what, I'm amazing. I've been on testosterone. This is my most recent level. I'd just like to have another prescription. I don't want to waste your time. But and it might be a nurse. Some of the nurses can prescribe. So just try and find, but just don't give up on the first appointment. That's the most important thing. If you feel that you want hormones, then keep going until you find someone that does understand.
I could speak to you all day, but I'm realizing we're taking up so much. Steph and Ben, have you got anything you want to ask Louise? Because I will just go on and on. We'll just have to get you back on, Louise.
I think I think from the research I did, it was great, because the everyone had an opportunity to kind of like put their own little story and their own life lived experience on the questionnaire, and the number of people that did was just phenomenal. Which means that there's definitely this need for this outlet to talk about it. And I think that things like Riot Women was absolutely brilliant. And you know, these things it feels like things are starting to ramp up, but then equally kind of think when the stats you've told us that they're not. And I suppose my question is, obviously you've done some research, What would be the magic wand? If you had a magic wand, Louise, what would it do? How would you do it? And you know, what would be the first thing you'd do and try and sort this out?
I think there are two things, really. One is educating women, and that's why I created Balance a few years ago, so people can get information on my podcast.
And we'll put a link to your apps and everything in the description here on the podcast.
The other thing is educating healthcare professionals, because they're letting people down. And we've got an education program that we launched quite a few years ago called Confidence in Menopause, and we're relaunching. It will be out by the time this podcast comes to air, because it's coming out next week. It's called Confidence in Hormones. So it's a healthcare educational program for people to do. Yeah, go on, sorry.
Oh, did that end at GPs, or would it include physiotherapists?
Anybody can join it. We've done it, so it's quite low cost. It's different modules, so you have to be able to dip in and out. We've filmed ourselves doing consultations like we did previously. It's quite chatty as well, so you can, you know, watch questions before and after. So anybody, like, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's for healthcare professionals, but people can learn from it. I just wish somebody would take this seriously. Like, even with all the so-called controversy, the panorama, like, why doesn't someone come and talk to me and say, let's just look at your data. Let's just look at what you're doing. You know, it's still like portrayed as it's just a sort of midlife problem, and people just take HRT to get nice skin and hair. You know, people aren't realizing the enormity of it. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to improve, but I think, you know, I've just been involved in this Balance docuseries, which is these.
I was about to ask about that. Yeah.
So that's really been amazing to be part of it. And these two female Jane monks from Dallas who have their own journey with perimenopause, and they go to lots of people, get lots of information. Some of it's really dreadful information, and they work it out for themselves. And if you think of a Jane monk who has got the best life ever, really, you know, if they still are having symptoms, then actually it just shows how important it is that everyone has access to treatment. And their big mantra, really, of being a monk is to not have harm and not do harm, whereas women are being harmed. And so to reduce this harm, to reduce this mental turmoil, to reduce this inappropriate diagnosis that's happening and inappropriate treatment, it's got to be a mass group effect. And I think women are cross, actually, because they're understanding it more. I've put another statement out recently just because I wanted people to just think a bit more. And it was overwhelming, the response that I got. And it's not for me. I don't want to be thought of as a victim. But I want people to be able to understand without being scared. And people have been scared for so long for the wrong reasons.
And you said it in your post earlier today, and you said, if a man was going through all of this, it would be treated in such a different way. And I think that is insightful.
I do think that in some ways, like if I said to a man, like, you know, by the age of 50, your penis will shrivel, you won't be able to have sex, you won't be able to think, you know, you'll probably give up work. You probably go, what the fuck, I'm going to go and get something. But 30% of men have testosterone deficiency, and most of that isn't taken seriously as well. So I don't want to, you know, big up men too much. I don't think it is that easy for them, actually. And that's another problem, because testosterone is misinterpreted for men and for women, really.
For education needed.
Mm, 100%. Ben, you've spent most of this episode with your hands round your head. We've spoken about so much of this before, but I know that you love your history and your facts and your data. And you've literally been aghast for most of this episode. Are you all right?
I'm traumatised. I'm traumatised by the idea of a poor girl having to go through this at 12. I think that's just so unfair. I'm a religious person, and eat fruit and pray makes me want to slap whoever said that. So that, like, is infuriating. I think it's the condescension. And I think this is probably a really uneducated thing to say. But it infuriates me when a lot of the worst treatment in my own personal anecdote life with my mum, with my wife, and then hearing these stories today, it's bloody men who are the doctors or gynecologists who are kind of like, you'll be fine, crack on. And it annoys me. Because
I hate to tell you, it's not just men. There's a lot of female gynecologists that often are worse. Yeah. I mean, you just need to look at the Panorama program. They were female doctors that made the program.
Do you think sometimes with a female doctor in that situation, it's because she's basically made her mind up about what she's going to do herself, and now that's what her patients will
do? You see, I think as a doctor, you can't judge patients, like I say. And some people think their own experience is enough to know what it's like to have a certain condition. You know, I have migraine, my daughter has migraine. It's completely different the way it affects us. I can sympathize with her more because I know how awful it is when I have a migraine and she has a migraine. But I don't know what it's like to be in her body. So quite a few of these female doctors have probably, I don't know because I've never spoken to them, I don't really know them, but they probably aren't taking hormones. They're probably not taking testosterone. But they probably think, wrongly or rightly, I don't know, that they don't need it. So therefore, if I talk about people with psychosis, talk about people with suicidal thoughts, they'll say, well, I didn't have that, I'm fine. And so, whereas I haven't had psychosis, I don't know what it's like to be sectioned, but it doesn't mean I don't believe patients. And so it's really hard, but it's really important in medicine to not have your individual beliefs going forward. You know, and that's why I feel very privileged as a doctor, because I have learned how to treat everybody as an equal. If I've got a drug abuser in front of me, I'm not going to ignore the fact he's got a chest infection and say, oh, come on, get off the streets and sort your life out. Actually, no, I'm a doctor and I should treat everyone the same. You know, and I think sadly people aren't treated the same, and women often aren't treated the same either. But, you know, we all have different experiences and different beliefs and different wants, and that needs to be respected.
And it's the level of the symptoms, isn't it? So obviously mine can be quite extreme. Some people might just not be sleeping very well. And that to them might be the worst thing that's ever happened, because they slept amazingly for their entire life.
Yeah.
And somebody might be like, well, you're sleeping not very well. It's not enough to put you on HRT. But for that person, not getting their sleep might be absolutely awful.
I mean, one of the very common symptoms is tinnitus. It's ringing in the ears. And I had a patient a few years ago now, I was only 38, and had tinnitus, like your labyrinthitis, got a lot worse initially before her periods, and her periods stopped. And it was all the time. And she was a primary school teacher. She couldn't concentrate to teach, so she gave up her job. She couldn't sleep because it's ringing in the ears, and she was close to ending her life because of this intractable symptom. And all the doctors said, it's not your hormones, all the tests are normal, you're probably just making it up. Absolutely not, you're too young to have hormones. And I was like, well, hang on, your periods have stopped, you've got an increased risk of osteoporosis and heart disease or whatever, I don't know whether your tinnitus is related, but let's give you hormones anyway. Within 3 months she's been fine. So the proof's in the pudding often, but you work with patients. You know, I think medicine isn't a one size fits all, you know, that's why it's enjoyable, you know, and it should be like that. And people get so screwed up about hormones, whereas we should be looking at the harms for some of the other drugs that we've prescribed for people as well.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Louise, we have a tradition on this podcast. I have a feeling this might be quite a long-winded one for you, which is what's annoyed you this week. And it doesn't have to be horsey in any way, shape or form. You're non-equestrian yourself. But do you have a what's annoyed you this week, or do you want us to go first?
No, it's fine, actually. I'm a bit annoyed because I've had a bit of a virus this week. So I feel like I'm a bit brain foggy, and that annoys me because that's how I was when I was perimenopausal. And I haven't, usually I do yoga every morning, and the last two mornings I haven't done it. And it really annoys me, actually, because I feel like, should I just power through it? But I don't, I've got muscle aches, and I just feel a bit, I just want to be looked after a bit. So that's annoyed me. I mean, the general annoyance of the work and the injustice is every day, so it's not a new thing. But that's just a reminder also that a lot of people misinterpret that, think all I do is hormones and that's it. That's going to cure everything. If I didn't do yoga most days, if I didn't do a headstand most days, if I didn't meditate every day, which I do, if I didn't eat really healthily, I don't drink alcohol, like, you know, I would not be as calm and healthy as I am. So we can't just, you know, think hormones are going to cure everything for us.
Also, can we backtrack? You can do a headstand. Yeah. Are you one of the people who can do it and just stay there in that room?
Yeah, I love it. I started to do Ashtanga yoga 23 years ago after my daughter was born. It's the only class I could fit in the gym with my husband being home. And the yoga instructor said, you do realise this is the most physical, strenuous form of yoga. I was like, oh God, no, I don't. Anyway, I now have an amazing yoga instructor, James Critchlow, who's just turned 70. I've known him for 22 years, I know. And I have the real privilege, he comes to the clinic every Wednesday, and teaches me, and then I do it on my own. And I always end with the three inversions, and the last inversion is a headstand. So I've done it for many, many years. And it is a bit of my sort of kick-ass thing. Like I think like these people on Panorama or people that hate me, I bet they can't do headstands. So it is a bit of a like, and also because I do it, I don't want to not do it because I'll suddenly get too old. So I do want to keep doing, and I actually, I think because of having migraines and everything else, it's actually really, I don't know if anyone listening does headstands, but it's a really great thing to do.
I'm like the clumsiest person. I got kicked out of baby yoga. I've only tried yoga once. I went to baby yoga. My child wouldn't stop crying. He was one of the kids that wouldn't sit still and be zen. So I called him a wanker, and the yoga instructor politely told me that maybe yoga wasn't for me. But maybe I need to try it again. I'm feeling inspired by you.
I just wanted to say quickly to Louise, I have a mantra for when I get abuse from people online or people just sticking their two pence in when it need not be. And it is, what's easier, painting the Mona Lisa or staring at it and calling it shit? Because there's a big difference in the values of those two people.
Thank you.
So I just want to end this with a thank you. We genuinely, you reached out to us. You didn't have to come on this podcast, Louise. Secondly, keep going. I don't know how you keep going with the amount of shit that's literally thrown at you. You are so inspirational. I hope you can feel the love coming out of here.
Thank you.
Honestly, if I could send you a hug, I would. Like, please keep going. It probably feels very hard at times. I'm glad you've got a support network and your daughters sound amazing. I hope my daughter turns out as lovely. But please keep the fight because you've got so much support and love from people, honestly.
Thank you.
But I don't know how you do it. How do you stay strong apart from standing on your head doing yoga moves?
I'm a bit of a weird person, actually. I think my dad dying when I was young has made me very independent, and I don't really do it for praise or love or for hatred. I just keep going because I think I'm also very sad. I love work, and you know, actually writing my book, The Power of Hormones, has been very cathartic actually, because it's all about hormones and how they work in the body. And I've alluded to about the some of the drugs in there, but that's been really good. It's very heavily referenced, and it's sometimes, you know, it's a good escape actually to work and focus on what you're doing. So that's been really useful to do that. I do have a very, very supportive husband. I've been with him since I was 18, and we both realised we're too old to find someone else. Yeah, I met him in Freshers Week at medical school. So he's very, very supportive. He's very clever. And he spends a lot of time, you know, saying, are you sure what you're doing is right? You know, for many years. And we've had very good discussions. So having the support from people that you know and love is the most important thing. I don't do it for any other thing, because I think, you know, life's too short, really. And you know, the social media is wonderful. I don't know the people. I'm not doing it for anything else. I don't really have FOMO. I don't look at other people and think, why can't I do X, Y, Z? I just sort of keep my head down and think, I'll just do the best that I can. And that's enough, really, isn't it?
When was the last time you were on a horse? Maybe this is what we need to introduce into your life. Get you out on a horse again.
Well, do you know, so we went to Costa Rica a few years ago, and we were horse riding through the cloud forest. It was really magical. But my husband hates horses. And every single horse, whether we've always just ridden with the children, you know, I mean, it's really not your type of horse riding, because the horses
any
know exactly
type of
where
horse riding is ours.
The horses
we love
know
it.
Where they're going, and I really enjoy it. But my husband, like, hates it, and these poor horses can pick up on his hatred. And so we did it, and my children loved it. And we said, "Well, we're going to go back and do it again." I mean, it was ridiculously expensive, but we were the other, like, miles away. And my husband's such a strop. He's like, "I'm not even going to watch you. I'm not coming." Every so often, we get the photos out, and he talks about it. So he's never going on a horse again. But my children would love to, so maybe I'll come just with me and the children, and we can have a nice experience without him clouding it for us.
100%. We need to make this happen. And I hope that we're going to plan another big night tour type event. So we would love to get you and your daughters, and even your husband. It is funny.
Yes, we can convert
to come along. Yes, exactly. It's entertaining as well as all about the horses. But we'd love to get you along and be able to return this brilliant favour that you have done us by coming on here. We'd love to give something back. We'll put all the information about Louise's books and everything in the podcast description. But honestly, I feel so emotional because you just are so wonderful. And I want to go and tell everyone who's being mean to you to just bugger off, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Please share this, guys. Please get this information out there for someone who just might be having a shit time. This, you never know, this might help them. Steph, as always, you are a champion as well, doing it in the horse world. Thank you so much for coming on. You haven't stopped grinning like a Cheshire cat the whole time. Are you like me? Are you fangirling Louise a little bit?
Completely. Please don't.
Benji, I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I'll survive. It's just been amazing to meet Louise. Like I say, you changed and saved my mum's life and you didn't even know it. And yeah, just to even get to speak to you face to face and say thank you for that is enough. And just to say, when we're talking about men, I'm making jokes about me not being involved. The reason my mum has the help she has now is because I heard Louise and then bullied my mum into listening to her. And so if you're a bloke out there and there's a woman in your life, friend, partner, mother, whatever, that you think could help from this, even just by trying to put this information in front of them, you could make the biggest change.
Yeah.
Amazing.
100%. Thank you so much. I will keep saying it, but you are an absolute hero. Keep fighting the good fight. If we can do anything at all, let us know. We're always here for you. We've got your corner. But for now, Ben, are you going to sing us out? Do you feel like you've got it in you?
Shut up and ride, 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 ride. Shut up and ride, 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 ride.
He's so talented, Louise. I can't tell you.